postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth story is with Elena Gay. Elena woke up excited and happy, thinking her water had broken, only to discover it was blood. Her planned birth center birth turned into an induction at the hospital, but thanks to compassionate care providers that focused on her well-being, as well as on a respectful transfer of care, Elena had a healthy and empowering birth. Stay tuned. The Birthful Podcast. Talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be, and happy new year, happy decade. Oh my goodness, if what you hear is helpful, make sure you subscribe. It's free, and that way you won't miss a thing. Okay, so my guest today is Elena Gay, and her birth story includes a very respectful transfer from a birth center birth to a hospital birth due to a placental abruption. Now, placental abruptions, which are quite rare, are when the placenta partially or completely detaches from the uterine wall before the baby is born. And of course, this is something that can cause a lot of fear and anxiety, and can in some cases be a significant emergency. But like in the story, that is not always the case. And that's why I appreciated her coming to share it, because it gives us a window into lots of variations of possibilities. So let's get to it. Elena, welcome to the show.
I'm so excited to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a really long time.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. And I was really... it was exciting and encouraging when you reached out to me, because you have a unique story in that you were planning for a home birth and you ended up with a transfer to the hospital. So that
a birth center birth.
Okay. So yeah. Before we get deep into that, because it is an unusual story, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, yeah. My husband and I had been married for about 3.5 years by the time our daughter was about to be born. And I had been interested in birth, like even before that, like long before I was going to be a mom, just found it really fascinating. I think in grad school, had stumbled upon the business of being born. And even though that was not like my field of study at all, like I was an English major, ended up kind of writing about like the rhetoric around natural childbirth a lot, and was just like super, super into it. You know, found your podcast. I think, yeah, still years before I was even pregnant, and listened to it a lot. And so definitely knew going into it that I wanted a natural birth, and just seemed like something that, was kind of a rite of passage, and it was really important to me. So that was sort of me coming into pregnancy.
And I love, that was very different from my experience in that I got pregnant and didn't know anything. Like, and it wasn't that was an accidental or an unplanned pregnancy, but I just didn't know. And I'm really encouraged when I hear more and more people that are digging into and reading about and considering what not just the having a baby part, but what being pregnant and becoming a parent, like being more intentional about what that could look like and what their wishes are before it happens, right?
Right. I felt like really fortunate going into it that I wasn't like playing catch up and trying to figure everything out and, you know, not discovering until last trimester that I wanted a midwife and a natural birth and everything, that I kind of knew going into it what I was after.
Yeah, because those 9 months go by quickly.
Thank you.
So what were those things you wanted? What were your wishes?
So I knew if possible, if I was staying a low-risk pregnancy, that I wanted to try for an out-of-hospital birth. Had just, you know, seen enough of those beautiful videos of birth center and home births, and read all of those stories, and knew that that was something I really wanted. And to have a midwife attended birth, and to just have as little intervention as possible, you know, like if possible to have basically no interventions at all, to just have total freedom of movement. And that was the goal. And I was, I wouldn't say like distrustful, but just kind of wary of a traditional hospital experience. Like, knew a ton of friends who had had great ones, like knew it was totally possible to have a natural birth in the hospital. But if I could, I wanted to be, out of a hospital.
And why do you think, what was making the difference for you in terms of going home when, you know, being at home for birth instead of going to a hospital? For you personally, not necessarily the providers and that, but like what motivated you for that choice?
Knowing that in a hospital, like even if it was going to be a natural setting, like there was a possibility, like you never know who's going to be on call, like what the nurses are going to be like. You may get all of these promises that, you know, you'll have a super easy time doing a natural birth and we'll support you in this. And then, you know, knowing people who got there and that wasn't the case. Just kind of being nervous about that. And like, you know, it's not that I was against anything in the hospital. I just didn't want to have to fight constantly at every little thing, or like have to like explain why I wanted something like delayed cord clamping or anything like that. Like, just wanted it to be kind of discussed beforehand. Like, I know the people who are going to be there. Everyone's supporting like what we want to do, versus like running the risk of not knowing who's going to be there, how they're going to feel about it, how much like we might have to push back to get what we wanted.
And so you find yourself pregnant, and you like, how quickly did you set up this team after?
Oh my gosh, like it was so fast, because I think I had been researching like midwives and birth centers and things in the area like before I was even pregnant. So I knew exactly where I was going. And I think as soon as I found out I was pregnant, like I called them, got set up for my 12-week appointment. I think I went to like a meet the midwife day that this particular birth center did, like, and I was maybe like 5 weeks pregnant at the time. Like, it was really fast. Like, I had a pretty strong idea of what I wanted. And then started looking at doulas. I think in my first trimester, I only interviewed one, and she was just the perfect fit. It turned out great. And so I think, I think I found her and hired her in the first trimester too.
And aside for setting up from setting up your birth team, what other things did you do to prepare for giving birth?
I feel like a lot. Like, I wrote this down in my daughter's baby book recently. Like, just all the things. We did, all of the classes that the birth center offered for like breastfeeding and newborn care, and we did a birthing class. My husband's schedule at the time wasn't really conducive to actually going to the birth center for the class, so we ended up doing an online one, the Mama Natural Birth course. And I think you had her on the show actually at one point.
Yeah, I'll link it in the show notes.
And so we did that one, and that was sort of last trimester. And I think a lot of that, I think it felt almost more like it was for my husband to kind of learn how to support me. Because I had just been, reading and listening and watching videos and things about birth for so long that a lot of this stuff in the class wasn't new to me, but it was really helpful, I think, to go through with him and to talk and be intentional about like what our plan was and his role as my support person. And I, read books. I think I read spiritual, not spiritual midwifery, the other
Anima,
Ina May Gaskin one.
Guide to Childbirth.
Yes, that one, the Mama Natural Week to Week Guide to Pregnancy. Just, whatever books I can get my hands on. I think a few more. I can't even remember all of them. But I was just like, I was so excited for it and so into it, that, it didn't feel like just prep work. Like, it was fun. And then on the more like physical side of preparation, just trying to stay active and, doing like hip stretches and like the womb squat every day, and just all of those kinds of things where you can't like truly practice for labor. Like, you don't know exactly what it's going to be like, but just trying to keep my body healthy and open and ready for birth.
And how was your husband feeling? You had done tons of preparation ahead of time. Maybe for him it was a bit new. What were his feelings towards all this?
I think from the very beginning, he was just like, he knew how important it was to me. Like, he knew how much I loved this stuff and was interested in it. And he was just really supportive of whatever I wanted to do. And I think he knew like how much reading I had done. So just kind of had implicit trust. And if I was making a decision, that I had really looked into it. And so, I know sometimes people are hesitant to do an out-of-hospital birth or anything, but he felt really good about it. He felt really good about the team that we had selected. And I think, his goal was just to try to give me, and the baby, like, the experience that I had been hoping for. So he was amazing the whole time.
Excellent. And so then, how did this, you're pregnant, pregnancy's going well, you're prepared, you've got your team, you're reading. And then how did the labor start? How did things get going?
So I was 40 weeks and 4 days, and nothing had really been happening, and I was trying really hard to not like be disappointed by that, because I knew like oh, first time moms like go an average of 10 days over, like it's okay, it doesn't mean anything. And I was trying not to get too nervous about it, because at 42 weeks, you know, you could no longer deliver at the birth center. And I wasn't even 41 at the time. I was 40 plus four. And nothing had really been happening. I wasn't dilated at all. And again, tried not to be too in my head about that, because I knew dilation doesn't like predict, you know, anything necessarily. But it was a Sunday morning and it was March 31st. So it's 4 days after the due date. And I was waking up slowly in the bed and kind of slowly realizing that the sheets were wet. And as I was coming to, I was like, oh, the sheets are wet. Like, this is exciting. And so I kind of ripped back the covers and saw that there was a little puddle there. And like, you know, thought, hey, maybe my water broke. And so I go over to the light switch to flip on the light. And I'm telling Johnny, like, Johnny, my water broke. Or maybe I just peed myself. I don't know. That's a possibility too. And then when I turned on the light, I saw that it was actually blood. And yeah, not a little bit, like not a ton, like it wasn't soaked, but maybe a puddle the size of like two or three hands. So definitely more than, you know, I had read Bloody Show or anything like that was supposed to be. And I went, and it took me a second to, I think, to click that this was serious. And so I was like, or I just peed myself. And I went, oh, it's blood, but like in this perky voice. It was like, it hadn't hit me yet. And I went to the bathroom and it was, you know, still bleeding, kind of dripping blood on the floor. The toilet like filled up like pretty red quickly. And I called my midwife and, you know, she was also like, well, you know, well, how much is it? Maybe it's just Bloody Show. And it's like, you know, I really don't think so. It seems like more.
It was
not just like spotting, like it was still bleeding. And so I sent her pictures of the sheets and the toilet that she had asked for. And she said that she was going to call me right back after she got the pictures. And she took a couple minutes. So I ended up calling her back. And she had taken a second because she called one of the other midwives from the birth center to collaborate and just like confirm like, hey, you would transfer for this, right? And she said, yeah. And so when I got back on the phone with her, she said, okay, I'm concerned and we're going to need to go to the hospital. And she started asking me like if I had felt the baby move yet that morning. And I hadn't been awake for very long, but I hadn't felt her move. And so I think that was extra concerning. You know, I'm bleeding, the baby isn't moving yet. And so she asked, there's two hospitals that we could possibly transfer to. And she asked which one we were closer to. We were about equal distance. So she said to go to, one called Memorial City. And so we were getting ready to pack up and to go. And I think the moment I realized that it was, you know, more serious than I thought, she said, and I would tell you to call an ambulance, but I think your husband can get you there faster. And that moment I was like, oh, and she was on speakerphone. So my husband heard that too. And we just kind of both kicked it into high gear. Like he didn't want me to be moving around more than necessary. So as soon as I was dressed, he sent me down to the car, and he grabbed all of our bags, and I was just trying to stay calm, and I think I generally am pretty calm in, like, high intensity situations, so I was just trying to keep that, and as soon as I got into the car and was drinking some cold water, like, I did feel the baby move a little bit, and so I think that made me feel a lot better, and so I was felt a little bit more peaceful on the ride to the hospital than I would have. And he knocked on our downstairs neighbor's door of our apartment, and I think freaked him out because he just like very quickly, matter of fact, what you said, Elena's bleeding, we have to go to the hospital. Here's the keys. Let my mom in, and ran out. So
well, and
that
he was
our.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. Yeah. That was our story of getting out the door.
Right, and so he was like very much in it's go mode. It's important. Like. Not emergency, but urgency, and let's get out of here.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And he definitely keeps a calm, level head in those situations, which was nice and very reassuring.
Let's take a quick break before you get to the hospital. We'll be right back. Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting with just one set of filters from their classic purifier, making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com, that's AquaTrue.com, and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. And we are back talking with Elena Gay, and she was having a birth center birth, planning for that, but then suddenly her water breaking wasn't her water breaking, and right, you had to run to the hospital. At the moment you're in the car going towards the hospital, what did you find that car ride gave you a time to sort of process and get grounded a little bit on what was happening, on the swift change, or what was going through your mind at that point?
Yeah. So the car ride, I think I actually felt like pretty peaceful. Like I was still nervous, you know, cause it was an emergency type situation. But I, especially after I had felt the baby move, it just felt like, okay, I think things are going to be okay. I just believe that things are going to be okay. So I was nervous, but I trying to maintain some sense of calm. And, you know, my midwife was texting me. I had two, and one of them was texting me that, you know, she was praying for wisdom for the doctors. And that was really comforting. And so I felt surprisingly okay on that car trip, even though it was pretty serious.
Mm-hmm. And how far was the hospital from your home? How quickly did you guys get there?
15 to 20 minutes. We probably made it in 15 minutes that day.
Mm-hmm. And were your midwives already there? Like, who was there waiting for you? Had they given the heads up to the hospital? What happened?
Yeah, so one of my midwives was actually in Indonesia at the time. So the other one, the one who was in town, she called ahead and you know, told them the situation, like bleeding, baby's not moving, and was gonna have them meet me downstairs and take me up to the OB emergency department. And she actually, that midwife used to work at that hospital as the director of the maternal fetal nursing department. I'm not sure what the official title was, but she was kind of head of that nursing department, and so had a lot of rapport with a lot of the nurses there, which ended up being like huge, I think, for just some feeling of continuity of care that the nurses I ended up having knew her. But a really kind nurse met me downstairs and had a wheelchair for me to bring me up to the OB emergency department while my husband parked the car. And she was really reassuring. She's like, hey, you look so much calmer and better than I expected. Like, you know, you don't look like you're dying, basically, I think is what they were preparing for, like somebody who just has massive bleeding, and it wasn't that. And so as soon as they got me up, the first thing was to hook me up to the monitors and see how the baby was doing. And the baby's heart rate was fine and was doing great. And so I think everyone at that point could kind of like breathe a sigh of relief that we have time to come up with a game plan here. It's not like a do or die right at this minute that the baby seems stable.
Right. She wasn't in distress.
Right.
Oh, so good. Right.
Yeah.
Such a relief. And I think you mentioned you had a little bit of that sense of calm when you felt her move in the car. Like they didn't know that they had gotten.
Right. I informed them of that too when we got there.
Excellent. So was your midwife allowed to be part of the team? Did she have to switch her role? Did the doulas come into play?
Yeah. So, the midwife got there Sunday morning. She had been at a birth. Like, I think she was working on 2 hours of sleep at that point. She got to be in the room, and she was consulting throughout the whole time we were in the OB emergency room, and we were coming up with a plan and trying to figure out what was going on. And then she ended up leaving after that when we got checked into labor and delivery, and she came back right before delivery. But she got to kind of play not a decision-making role necessarily, because she didn't have hospital privileges, but she was there. The nurse who had brought me up to the OB emergency department, she had actually hired that nurse to work at that hospital, however many years back. And I remember that nurse mentioning, like, you are in really good hands with Lanice. Like, she is awesome. And that was super reassuring that, like, the people I was working with at this hospital, weren't like, oh, you know, a out of hospital birth, like a little whack job here and her whack job midwife or anything like that. Like it was not, there was no judgment, no negativity. And they were really respectful of her.
Yeah, they had good rapport. And how about with the attending doctors?
Yeah, so she was amazing. And I just think of her and just think like, I want to be that woman's best friend. So she walked into the room, and I think at that point we had a strip of the baby's heart rate, and we knew that was looking good. And she was just so calm and reassuring, and she came in and just like, hey, like you look so much better than I was expecting. You know, I heard bleeding, like baby's not moving. I was expecting someone with white lips, and you look great. The baby looks great. We're going to try and figure out what's going on here. And if it's nothing too serious, like hopefully we can send you back to the birth center and you can have your baby there. And so she was definitely just like, you know, kind of on our side, like wanted us to have the experience we were hoping for if we could. And so they had the strip, and then she did an ultrasound to see if she could see anything on there that would be a cause for the bleeding. And she didn't, she mentioned that even if it was a placental abruption, which is what it ended up being, a very small one, but they wouldn't be able to see it on the ultrasound unless it was at least 50% separated. But what she did see is that I had super, super low fluid, which she said, you know, could just be that you're a few days over your due date and it's time to have a baby. It could be that your water broke this morning, when you were bleeding and that was fluid mixed with blood. We can't really know because whatever test they do for to see if your water is broken apparently is always positive if there's blood. So there was no way to like test and see if there
was separate those out. Fluid.
Yeah. So she did that, and that didn't really reveal much except for very little fluid. And so then she was going to do an internal exam, and that was the point where she was like, you know, and if it doesn't look like you're bleeding very much anymore, and there's no really cause there, like maybe we can send you home or send you back to the birth center and hopefully you can do things there. And I was on the monitor, it was showing that I was having regular contractions about every 5 minutes, even though like they were super, super light. Like I could, you know, just kind of felt maybe some very light cramping, definitely not active labor. So she did the internal exam. And there was just, unfortunately, so much blood. Like, I didn't see it, but my midwife and my husband both saw it, and she was just kind of pulling out very long clots and couldn't, of course, like, find any source, like, in the internal exam for why I would be bleeding. And it was just quite a bit. And so I think she felt for me that I was going to be staying at the hospital after that point for sure. But she just said it in the kindest way I think I could ever imagine. She was like, okay, so you know, here's all the things that could be reason for the bleeding. Like it could be cervical change or cervical irritation, but it's really too much like for either of those. This is way more than we would expect to see for that. And so other things, like she mentioned placental abruption, but she goes, fortunately, the treatment plan for all of those things is the same. It's to have a birthday party. So that's our course of treatment. We're going to have a birthday party. And it was just like so kind and sweet. Like a sweet way to tell me, like, I'm going to have an induction, which was not at all my plan. You know, but she was so calm and reassuring. And my midwife said, like, yeah, that is absolutely the right thing to do. She even told me later, my midwife, when she said, when the doctor said, hopefully we can send you back to the birth center, that she was like, oh no, like I don't want her back at the birth center. Like, after how much she's bled, like she's definitely risked out of that. So that was the plan then. And then another thing about this doctor that was just so great. She kind of immediately went into a very long spiel of like all of the things that I would need to know. Like, here's everything, you know, that you should know about like epidurals and an IV. And if we end up having to do a C-section, here's how that's going to go. And she just spoke really, really, really quickly. Not because she was trying to rush out, but I could just, you could tell that she really valued like informed consent and me like knowing all of my options and everything. And she, I think because she knew I was hoping for a natural birth, like kind of could predict all of the questions that I was going to have. And so she was talking about like, so, you know, when people come in with their birth plan, a lot of those things now in our hospital are standard practice. So things like delayed cord clamping, like immediate skin to skin, delaying a bath or things like that are all things that like we do anyway, which was really, really reassuring to hear. And then a few things that I did have questions about was, of course, like, am I going to have to do Pitocin? And she, you know, kind of said, like, we're going to take it slow. Like, my cervix was super closed. She said, closed, 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 which is disappointing to hear. So she said, like, we're not going to start out with Pitocin. Like, that is, you know, like, not really going to be helpful. We'll start out with a cervix, like, cervix thinning drug, and we'll do that for 12 hours. Like, we're in no rush. This could be a couple of days. And I asked, I think, about intermittent monitoring, which was something I hoped that I would be able to have, but I knew at this point was probably not going to happen. And she's like, yeah, you know, with the bleeding and us not really knowing what's going on, like we probably do need to do continual monitoring and an IV because of the very low fluid. And, you know, just if anything massive happened, like, and I started bleeding a ton more all at once, like that they would really need to have that line in place. And so even though I was disappointed to hear that I was, you know, I was going to be induced, I was going to have continual monitoring, I was going to have an IV. I think I felt in total agreeance with all that. I didn't want it, but I knew it was definitely the right thing to do. And she was just like so kind and calm and reassuring to take the time to explain, like, yeah, here's why, like, those things in this case are probably necessary. And, you know, she even mentioned if this wasn't the situation, if you weren't bleeding, I would say, like, yeah, like, you know, no IVs, like, intermittent monitoring, all that, let's go for it. But given the situation, these are interventions that we need.
Well, and it provided a lot of clarity that there was so much blood, right? It's clear,
yes,
that
absolutely,
that shouldn't be there. At that point,
right.
It wasn't what you were expecting at home. It wasn't what she was expect or anybody was expecting at the hospital. So that's kind of like where the birth plan requires a flexibility of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, even though these weren't your wishes, you were still feeling heard and were included in the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They were so, I think just like, all the people I encountered were like expressed some kind of like, hey, like, I'm really sorry that, you know, you're not getting the birth that you had hoped for, but we're going to try to give you as close as possible here, you know, some approximation of that, which was, you know, just huge. Like it was so reassuring. And it, I think it made such a difference in the whole experience.
That and it's so human, right? Trying to
Yeah,
understand your choices, and
absolutely.
we can balance both. We can take care of the situation and also consider the person that's going through it.
Absolutely. And especially given that we had, you know, like it wasn't, we've realized now it's not a dire emergency at this minute. Like the baby is doing fine. We have time to talk about it, to talk about options. And they took advantage of that and kind of gave me the time to process and to ask questions I needed to ask. And it was so helpful.
And that is a huge clear point. That baby was fine and tolerating everything, so you did have the time to do. So then you guys get admitted. What happened next?
Yeah, so we got to our labor and delivery room, and we knew that we were kind of in for a long process. Like her name was Dr. Rockison, had mentioned like we could have a baby tonight, it could be tomorrow, it could be the next day, like we're not in a rush. And especially given that my cervix was, I think, only 30% of face, not dilated at all. We knew it was going to be at least 12 hours of just cervidil. So we get to the room, and I think that's when all of the just emotions of like disappointment and frustration that I'm here at the hospital and I don't want to be really hit, because before that things were moving more quickly, and I was just so relieved that the baby was okay. Once we got into the room, I think maybe a little bit before noon, so we had gotten to the hospital around 8, I wasn't bleeding very much anymore. Like not much was coming out. And I was just kind of like mad about it. Like, ugh, I'm not even bleeding anymore. Like, this isn't where I want to be. Like everything's fine. I just wish I could go back to the birth center, which of course was, you know, not, I knew was not an option, knew was not the right thing, but I was frustrated and disappointed to be there. And at that point, I was really feeling nervous that I was going to end up having a very typical like hospital experience. Maybe not typical, but I think maybe the typical of like 10 years ago, where you're just hooked up to a ton of machines and you can't move around, and you're not allowed to like labor in different positions and all of that. Because when I first got into the room, I had to wipe myself down with disinfecting wipes for whatever reason. They gave me these wipes and a chart that was in the bathroom, and I had to wipe off these certain parts of my body to prevent infection or something, which just felt very cold and clinical. And I was like, just kind of mad about it. Like, I'm, you know, like, what's wrong with my skin? Like, I'm going to cause an infection for my baby or something. And I know like what it's for, and, I was still not happy about it. And when I first got in there, I was hooked up to about like 4 different machines. I had to have the belt for continual monitoring, and so I couldn't move around very much with that. A blood pressure cuff, one of the finger things for heart rate, and an IV. And it didn't help that it took, I think, 3 different nurses to get the IV in. So I was just getting stuck all over the place, hooked up to a bunch of things. I hated the hospital gown. I felt like I was, you know, just vulnerable and exposed and like a circus tent. Like, I hated it. And I was pretty disappointed at that point. And I think my husband was trying to keep me in good spirits. But at some point, either before or after they placed the cervidil, like all of that got resolved. Like I asked if I could wear my own robe, and they were totally fine with that. They found a portable monitoring for me, so I didn't have to wear the belt. They do the kind where it just like attaches to your belly. Which was probably, yeah, that was probably like one of the biggest like tools that they had that made this amazing birth experience possible.
I am so like jealous and waiting to get those here in our neck of the woods, because we still have the belts with the flat monitors, and it's, yeah. Why? Like,
yeah, I didn't know if they were common or not.
They're just like stickers, right?
Yeah, well, they kind of rub your belly with like a sandpaper type thing to make your skin like grittier, I guess, to grip on. And then it's almost like a pokey Velcro, the things that stick to your belly. And it's like a little battery pack that went right over my belly button. And it had 4 kind of nodes coming off of it that were like a prickly Velcro type thing that they just stuck straight to my skin that they had rubbed with like the sandpaper type stuff. So was not familiar with that at all, because I had not been planning to use anything like that. But it was a lifesaver, because then They did that. They also took off the blood pressure cuff. I only had to put it on like every 30 minutes or something when it beeped. And the finger thing. And so then all I had was the IV that I was hooked up to, and I could, you know, carry that and roll that around the room. And it was long enough that I could move and be in any position. So that was huge. And just like them being so, you know, like adamant about like, it took a while, you know, to get the thing connected, but they were like, yeah, we're going to get this for you so that you can move around. And we're really supportive in that way. It was amazing.
And let's take another quick break. We'll be right back with more of the details. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns, and sometimes I find that investing gets put off because it doesn't seem urgent, or because with our busy lives, we may not have the time to research and manage said investments, which is why I so appreciate that Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future, and that you don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. So, for example, I take advantage of Acorns' roundup feature where they round up the purchase amounts I make in my linked account to the nearest dollar, and then they automatically transfer that to my invest account portfolio. Also, Acorns can recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invest your money for you. For me, that's easy-peasy investing. Head to acorns.com/birthful or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Client testimonial may not be representative of all clients. Tier 1 compensation provided. Compensation provides an incentive to positively promote Acorns. View important disclosures at acorns.com/birthful. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Please consider your objectives, risk tolerance, and Acorns fees before investing. Acorns Advisors LLC Acorns is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are provided to clients of Acorns by Acorns Securities LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. For more information, visit acorns.com.
And we're back talking to Elena Gay about her birth experience. So it seems like now you kind of went through a lot of the processing of what was going on. And once the adrenaline went down, you were like, oh, this is not what I wanted. But it seems from what you were saying, you've gotten to a place where you've kind of found some acceptance into what was going on. And also of figuring out how to best work with the situation that was going on by matching it to your needs in terms of wearing your own clothes and not the gown, and you know, bringing back some more mobility to your experience.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that like both I felt comfortable asking like, hey, can I put on my own clothes? Can I actually wear underwear? Because at first they had me like not in anything, and they said they like didn't want me to wear underwear. So I was bleeding on this like Chex pad on the bed, which was just a horrible feeling. And so I got to put on like a pad to contain the bleeding and underwear and my own clothes. And yeah, I definitely feeling like I eventually felt a lot more accepting of the situation. I think a big part of that, when they placed the cervical, and they were actually going to do Cytotec, which I, you know, just from classes I had taken and stuff I had read, wasn't crazy about, because I knew that Cytotec dissolved, and like basically once you put it in, there's no going back. Whereas with Cervidil, it's more like a tampon, and you can take the medicine out like if you need to. And so I even asked like, hey, is there a reason we're doing Cytotec instead of Cervidil? And they called the doctor, and she was like, yeah, if she wants Cervidil, let's do Cervidil. Like, that's totally fine. And so they switched that prescription for me, which was, you know, great. But then I was upset because it seemed like I was not bleeding anymore. But when the nurse placed the Cervidil at about 12:30 p.m., I like there was a ton of blood again as she was placing it, and that kind of caused me to accept like, okay, I actually am where I need to be. Like, I'm still bleeding. This is still not a you know, a normal low risk situation where I could be out of the hospital. Like, I'm where I need to be. And so that combined with like, you know, getting to move around, getting in my own clothes, I think I was eventually in a much better headspace.
And I want to clarify, because this is something that wasn't quite, it didn't it's hard to understand unless you've seen it, that yeah. like it, how can, if you're walking around and you're not bleeding and there's not that much on the pad, how can then the nurse figure out, oh no, there's tons of blood, like where is it hiding? And it's the, right, and but
yeah,
especially if you're lying down, or you know, it's the blood's coming from the uterus,
right,
and it can yeah. pool in the vagina and clot exactly, there exactly. and then that's where they get it out from, kind of manually.
Yes, and so as she was pulling out her gloves, there was just like, it was all over her gloves, and then I had to lay down for an hour after the Cervezil, for whatever reason, and then when I stood up to go to the bathroom, like then there was a ton of clot, like, and the nurses actually were really nervous about it and called the doctor to see if we needed to change course of treatment or anything, because it seemed like so much. Unfortunately, the doctor was like, well, no, like, that's why she's here. You know, as long as the baby's fine, like, we know she's bleeding, and, you know, continue with the plan. But yeah, so once I knew I was still bleeding and everything, I was a lot more accepting of the situation.
And so they placed the Cervidil, and that's, did you do just the one dose?
We just did one dose, and it was 12 hours. So they placed it at 12:30 p.m. And so from then through most of the rest of the day, it was just kind of like, here I am at the hospital, like not really feeling like I'm in labor, but I'm here. And we, my husband had his mom come in from out of town to go take care of our dog and to like bring stuff up to the hospital that we forgot. And so for a while, we were just kind of like killing time. And once I was happy about the situation, it was a lot better, like, to be there. There was a Harry Potter marathon on, so we had that on. I was kind of bouncing on the birthing balls that they had, and just on the ground, like doing stretches, and which freaked one of the nurses out. She's like, "Why are you on the ground?" And she like, not in the like, you should be in the bed way, but in the like, let me put all of these things on the ground so that you're not touching the germy floor, which was very nice of her and probably wise. Yeah, so for a while, I would say until like 9:30, it was just kind of us there. You know, I was feeling kind of crampy, but it really wasn't hurting. We were just there trying to entertain ourselves and like take care of all of the logistic things and tell work that we were having a baby and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And so did things start getting more intense, or why after 12 hours, what made him not do another dose, or what was going on there that determined a different course of action?
The plan was always like, let me go for 12 hours. As long as the baby's doing fine, we'll check you again. They said midnight 30, which I have never heard before. And I don't know if that's like just hospital lingo, but we'll check you again at midnight 30, because that'll be 12 hours, and we'll see where we go from there. And so I would say around like maybe 9:30, 10, we decided to try to get some sleep. So we were like cuddled up in this tiny hospital bed. And then around 11:30, I started having, like, I was having more intense contractions. They were not like super tough, but I was waking up in between them. I was starting to have to like really focus and breathe through them, and was making noise. Whereas before, you know, I could just basically ignore them and talk through them. So we did that for like an hour or so, but still mostly sleeping and resting. And when they checked me again at 12:30, by this point, like, I had new nurses, you know, we had gone through shift change and everything. And I was like not dilated at all, still, or I think I was maybe half a centimeter, but I was still not even completely effaced. And the nurse I had, her name was Chris, at that point recommended Pitocin, which I was, you know, so disheartened to hear. I was really hoping that because my contractions were starting to pick up and get more painful, that maybe I wasn't going to need Pitocin and it could just be, you know, just Cervidil and then a natural label from there. But that was not the case. So she, and just to say a bit about Chris and how amazing she was, she had actually told me she had been planning a home birth herself with her second baby. And so she was just like, you know, I feel for you. Like, I know how you feel with this transfer. Like, I know how disappointing this is, but we're going to try to give you everything that you want. Like, we're going to try to make this as close to the experience you're hoping for as possible. And your next birth, like, we're going to get you in that birth center and we're going to do it. And just, of course, even though she was not going to be there for the next birth, like, She was just very, very supportive in that way. So when it was midnight 30 and I had really not progressed, she recommended starting Pitocin. And I asked her, like, but since, you know, my own contractions are kind of starting to pick up, like, could we give it a couple of hours and see, you know, what my body is doing on its own before we start? And I think she, I think, conferred with the doctor, because at some point Dr. Rockeson came back in the room and was like, basically they were like, yeah, you know, we can do this. Like, we don't want to give it too long because of the situation and because of the bleeding. Like, the last thing we want is to just let it stretch on and on and on, and then you do end up having massive bleeding and it does end up being an emergency C-section. So they said, you know, we'll give it a couple of hours, we'll let you shower off, get unhooked from the machines, and then we can come check again and see where you are. And so at around 2:30, they came back, and I, Chris said I was like maybe a one. And at a later point, another nurse I think she was filling in a different nurse, and she said like a generous one. So I think I was probably not even a one. And she was just saying that to try and keep me from being totally disheartened. And so 2:30 a.m. Was when we started Pitocin.
And I do appreciate that you were advocating for yourself, trying different things, and yeah, that they were working with you of like, you know, can we see what my body does? And you did that for 2 hours, and it wasn't necessarily as much progress as they were looking for.
Right.
But I also, in inductions, really appreciate creating those gaps that are possible, yeah, if everything's looking good, in between doses of things, in between actions, to kind of, right, feel a little normal. Like, you got unhooked, yeah, from everything and took a shower.
Yeah, which was huge. And I got to shave my legs, which was great, because I didn't end up shaving them again for a long time after that. So that was much needed. Yeah, and it was so, I think you used the word earlier, human. And yeah, it's just so human and so kind. And I think she even said, Chris, the nurse said, you know, if you weren't bleeding and this wasn't the situation and we weren't worried about that, then I would say absolutely, like, no need for Pitocin. You let your body keep doing its thing and we'll see where it goes. But given the situation and like that we're trying to prevent this from becoming worse, like, here's why I'm recommending that we start on Pitocin. And yeah, so it just felt very heard, even though Pitocin was probably like super high up on the birth plan of things I don't want to happen. I felt really okay with it because the team was willing to try other things and give me space and was so.
How did the Pitocin feel?
Not great. Yeah, they started me out on a 2x2 dose, I think, which I didn't hear, but that meant that they were going to start me off on 2 units or something and increase it every 2 hours, which I didn't know. And I'm very glad I didn't know that they were going to be increasing it every 2 hours. So they started it off, and we were going to try to continue to get more sleep for as long as we could. And we did that until about 5:30. So from like 2:30 to 5:30, I was in the bed trying to sleep in between contractions, and I would get a few minutes and would kind of wake up, and it was, you know, really starting to pick up and hurt at that point, and the lower back and everything. And so it's kind of moaning through those, starting to make noise. I didn't know if I was going to be a vocal laborer, and I definitely was very loud, not at that point. It was still kind of low moans, and my husband would rub my back. And at one point in that time frame, he wasn't rubbing my back in a contraction, and I looked back and he was on his phone. And I like couldn't really speak to tell him I was upset. I was just like, ugh. And he like got off his phone and came over quickly. And of course, like, he was doing something perfectly reasonable. I think he was updating the midwives and the doula and telling him what was going on. But I was not logical enough at that point to realize that. And so I was just upset about it.
Right. Just not during the contraction.
Yeah. And around 5:30 was when, you know, I couldn't sleep in between contractions anymore. I couldn't stay in bed. And so we started getting up and doing more active coping techniques. And he was saying, like, you know, I think it's probably time to call the doula. And I was like, no, you know, I don't want her to come if I'm still trying to sleep and she doesn't have anything to do. And he was much, much more aware of what was going on and like how deep into labor I was than I actually was. Like, I think I was still kind of in denial that it's maybe not really starting yet. But he went ahead and texted her anyway, which is absolutely the right call. So before she got there, he was using kind of like a tennis ball roller. I don't know if you've seen those where you put the tennis balls in the sock. And he was doing some back massages with that, and it was helping, but it was getting to a point where it was not working anymore. And especially like because of the Pitocin, at that point I was having like double peak contractions. So I would get one that was really strong and then just get a 15 second break and then get another really strong one. And then I would get like that, you know, 3-4 minute break or whatever that is more normal.
Yeah, we call those, so, we call those camelbacks.
Yes, and they're not fun.
No.
I was getting that. I was experiencing a lot of back labor. And the nurse came in at one point and I told her that that was happening. And she's like, okay, well, we're going to try to turn the Pitocin up. And that will hopefully get you on a more regular pattern and space those out. And I'm sure that that is very true, but I did not want to hear that at the time or believe it. And because I was, you know, going to ask her to turn it down. And she was like, well, ideally, you know, we'll get you to every 2 to 3 minutes. And I was like, I can't do this every 2 to 3 minutes. And she was so sweet to just say like, you know, that's our goal. Because what else can you say? Like, of course, you have to do it every 2 to 3 minutes. She was like, well, that's our goal. And she just kind of turned it up and walked back out. And I was too gone at that point to like say anything, but I was not happy about it. Very glad that my husband texted our doula, Kaylee, when he did, because right at the point where I was saying, like, I don't think I can do this anymore. Like, I don't know if I can do this. She came in and I didn't see this because I, at this point, was kind of in labor land. My head was down and on the bed. And he said that she just came in and saw me and like threw her bags down on the ground and ran over and immediately started squeezing my hips. And I was like, oh, like, that's amazing. Like, my husband was helping, but she definitely had that magic touch of like, oh, that actually really helped.
Yeah, that you described something I'm familiar with of like, yeah, arriving in the room and going like, oh, yeah, needed stats.
Yeah, she just did a bunch of things at once. Like, she pulled my hair up into a bun so it was out of my face, and she started putting cold rags on me and like squeezing and like pressing in all of the places where it was really making a difference. And she asked, you know, where I was feeling contractions, and like I told her things were happening in my back, and so she was pressing there, and it was super helpful. And so she got there around 6:50, and so it was right before shift change and right before they were about to check me again. And so they checked me again at 7 o'clock, and I was at a 4 centimeters dilated, which I was pretty disappointed about because I felt like I was really, really working hard. And even though, you know, I knew and I had heard like not to put too much stock in the numbers, it's hard not to, you know, like I think we're just kind of wired that way to value like regular increments like that. And so hearing I was only a 4, I was like, I really don't know if I can do this.
And I'm thinking from barely a 1 to a 4, that's really great progress.
Right. Like it had not been that long, and the nurses, you know, seemed fine with it, but I was pretty disheartened by it. And so at that point, I didn't know this at the time, but I think after that is when I started to enter transition. That's when I was really in that headspace of like, I can't do this. And I never said the words out loud, I want an epidural. Because I didn't want to admit to myself that I wanted an epidural, because that was not part of the plan. But I think the phrasing I used with them was like, next time the nurses come in, I want to talk pain relief options instead of saying the word epidural. And they were like, okay. And they knew, you know, we had talked about beforehand in our prenatal appointments, if we do end up at the hospital or things like that, and I'm saying I want an epidural, like I want you guys to keep me strong, like I don't really want that. And that's exactly what they did. They were amazing. And they were like, Kaylee, the doula, was like, all right, you know, just give me 3 more and then we can talk about that. And so I did 3, and then I was like, all right, I did 3 more. And then my husband told me later I had actually done like 10 more, and I just had no idea, like time was going out the window at that point. And I had been asking them to check me again, even though they had checked me really recently. I had no concept of time. And in my head, I was just like, okay, if it's going to be all day, you know, they said this could be like several days of induction, then I can't do this all day and I need something. And so I was asking them to check me again. And eventually they did. I think it was like the doctor shift change at 8 o'clock. And in my head, they were checking me because I had asked them to. And I was told that was not the case at all later by my husband. Like it had nothing to do with me asking. They were doing it anyway. It wasn't like close to the time I was asking, but I had no concept of time. And so they checked me at like 8 o'clock. And at that point, I remember the exact words the nurse said, which is surprising because it was hard to pay attention to anything, you know, at that point, like to speak or do anything at all. But she said, "You've made rapid progress. You're at a 7 or an 8. And I think that was all I needed to get through. Like just hearing "you've made rapid progress," it's like, okay, I'm doing something. And so from that point on, it was about 8 o'clock. I never really thought about getting an epidural again. Like I was, I just kind of got out of that headspace. I think you've mentioned the term before in your shows, like the thinking brain. And that's when I really like was out of the thinking brain. Like I was just fully committed to labor in labor land. And I really, I don't know, like I stopped experiencing things as pain. It was still super, super intense, but it wasn't like the dread of like, oh, here comes another painful contraction. It was just going with it. It was intense. It was not pleasant, but it wasn't painful.
And there's something to be said for when you stop resisting those sensations that they actually hurt less, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not tensing up and maybe leaning in and exploring it. And you had made in 1 hour, like it reminds me once again that birth is so not linear. In 1 hour, you went from 4 to 7, 8, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just knowing that, like that it was moving really fast. I think I felt so much, more willing to go through the process. And at some point in there, Dr. Roxton came back in to say goodbye because she had been on shift for like 48 hours. And I was with whatever like logical capacity I had left, which was not much, was disappointed about that because I really liked her and was hoping that she would be there to deliver the baby, or, you know, catch the baby or whatever the term is. But, she had been there for 48 hours, so definitely had to go home, but she wanted to say goodbye, which was sweet. Like, you know, she was taking her own time to come. And she came in and I think at that point the bed was sort of up, like the head of the bed was tilted up and I had my arms on the top of it and I was kind of leaning over like that. And she was like, "Hey, you're going to have a birthday party. Like you're going to meet your baby soon." And I like barely lifted my head and turned it to her and went, "I like you," and then just like dropped it back down and back into labor land. And she was like, "I like you too." And she left. And long before that, like when we were still in the OB emergency department the previous morning, she had told me, you know, if we do go through shift change, the doctor is going to be Dr. Rodriguez and he's great. And he's also going to be on board with all of this. And so I at least knew that like I knew that the doctor who would be coming in was also going to be, just respectful of what we were trying to do and was going to let that unfold as naturally as possible.
And so how, you know, you're progressing right along, things were getting more intense. Did you at some point feel like a shift of, oh, I've got to put, like, did you have an urge to push?
Oh,
how was that?
Definitely, definitely. It was not long after that either. And the timeline stuff, I had no idea, like, what time things were happening, and it could have been hours, and I wouldn't have known, but my husband kind of filled me in later. So it was about 8:30 where I started to feel my body push. And it was concerning because, you know, I was bleeding. And so with each, like, little involuntary push that I could feel my body doing, I could feel, like, some blood coming out, like, you know, just small gushes, and being concerned about that. And it was so hard to vocalize, like, because I could barely talk. And I told the nurses I was worried about the bleeding. And they're like, "Yeah, you know, like you look fine on the monitors and like the baby looks great and you're doing great." I think I was eventually able to vocalize that, like, "No, I'm concerned about the bleeding because I'm bleeding more because I'm pushing." But at some point in there, one of the nurses had mentioned, like, you know, "Let us know before you feel your body start to push, And I told her at that point, like, I am, like, I'm pushing with every contraction. And she's like, oh, well, you know, well, don't, like, we have to check you. We have to make sure that you're not, or that you're fully dilated. And my husband told me after the fact that he had kind of, like, just, you know, taken her aside and been like, hey, could you not phrase it like that? Like, I totally understand, like, why you have to tell her not to push, but I think that saying don't push is just going to be really discouraging to her, which I thought was just so sweet. Like, he was just such an advocate for
me
there.
That's so sweet. Yeah,
I know. Ooh. Yeah, he's amazing. So they did check me shortly after that to make sure that I was fully dilated, and I was. And I think that was about 8:30. So it went from, you know, at 7 o'clock being a 4 to 8:30 being fully dilated. You know, so just like you said, very nonlinear, like, and unpredictable. And so from there, like, I had the green light to push. And so I was just kind of listening to my body. We were kind of in and out of the bed, like, doing different positions. I think where I ended up for quite a while was on the yoga ball, the birthing ball, like, next to the bed with my, like, shoulders and arms kind of draped over the bed, sitting on the ball. And then when I would get the contraction, and, you know, feel it coming on, I would lift my knees up and, like, kind of stand up a little bit more, because I could also feel the baby, like, coming down. So it felt uncomfortable to be sitting all
on
the way
something?
On the
yeah.
ball. Yeah. And the, like, my doula was just amazing and was still, like, you know, squeezing hips and rubbing. And my husband, because she was there, and this is another reason where I think doulas are so important, because she was there for that more, like, physical support role, which she was better at than he was. Like, she had, you know, much stronger instincts for, like, where to press and rub. And he got to be there for, like, the more emotional, like, intimate role. And he would just kind of be whispering, like, in my ears, like, you're doing great. Like, we're going to meet Charlie, which is the baby's name. We didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl at the time. Like, you're doing great. And Charlie's coming, and Charlie's doing great. I think he, I forgot about this, but he would tell me, you can ride lions, which was a sort of a joke that we had, we had these birth affirmation cards that came with the Mama Natural Birth course. And one of them, there's this, like, you know, pregnant woman. It's a little, like, drawing of pregnant woman, like, riding a lion, which we just thought, like, was so cute and funny. But he was telling me, like, you can ride lions, like, you've got this.
Oh, I love that.
I know. It was so sweet. And so, like, at some point in that pushing phase, things started to, like, seem like they were spacing out a little bit more. And, like, I could be a little bit more in tune with the real world and what was going on. Because I remember, like, I was finally having the energy to whisper to him, like, I love you, like, thank you. And he was giving me water between contractions. And so I don't know, like, I think I have heard, like, I remember hearing on your show about that sometimes, like, the pushing phase, like, there's a little bit of a break almost, like, before the baby actually comes. But things were spacing out a little bit. And yeah, just trying different positions. At one point, I remember being in the bathroom. I did a few contractions on the toilet. Like, when I stood up, I got hit with a contraction. And so I kind of, like, collapsed onto my doula and was, like, pulling her to the ground. And I could feel her shaking, like, trying to hold me up, like, as I was hanging on her shoulders. And then that contraction ended. And I heard her say to my husband, like, okay, if she wants to labor like that, like, you've got to take the next one, because I can't hold her up when she's doing that. But yeah, for most of it, I was near the bed. And of course, like, the hospital, because they were so amazing, like, they had the lights low this whole time. So it was very low lights. I haven't mentioned much about, like, what the nurses were doing, because they really were just kind of, like, there in the background to support. They weren't doing much. They were totally fine with me being all over the room, not being in the bed. And they were just kind of, you know, there to do things as needed. And of course, you know, they were working hard, like, they're monitoring everything. But as far as, like, you know, touching me or doing anything to me, that was all very minimal.
And so, yeah, for, like, that, when your baby was ready to come when she was ready to come. Like, how did you know that things were, because it seems like you were moving around a lot, even during pushing, which I love to hear because it can take some time.
And it did. It took, I was not aware of this, but I think it took about 2 hours of pushing. But there was a certain point where I could definitely feel her coming lower. Because at first the pushing just kind of felt like, you know, maybe not that different from going to the bathroom. But then at a certain point, like I could feel her coming down. So that was happening, but then she would come back up a little bit. And so that went on for a while where I would push and I could feel her come down more and then the contraction would end and she would kind of go back up a bit more. Which was like a hard place to be because it was uncomfortable when she came down. So it was almost like, yeah, I want you to go back up a little bit more again. Like that feels more manageable, but you're never going to come out if you keep doing that. And so at some point I was too tired to keep sitting on the ball, and supporting myself with my elbows when I had a contraction. So I got onto the bed, and I was on my side, which is not what I envisioned at all. Like I didn't think that would be a birthing position I liked, but that was where I ended up, pushing her out. And so while I was there, my husband was holding my leg up most of the time. The OB who was on call had entered the room, while I was still on the yoga ball, Dr. Rodriguez. I remember the nurses asking him like, hey, like she's, you know, wanting to push like this and these positions, is that okay? Cause they said, you know, kind of depends on the doctor, like that you have. And in that kind of like stupor, I remember him saying very quietly, like, yeah, whatever she wants, like let her do what she wants, and being really reassured by that. So delivery happened, like I was on my side on the bed, had been in this place for a while of feeling her come down, like feeling her go back up. But at this point, where I was on my side, she was definitely staying down. And it was that just kind of constant pressure. They asked me if I wanted to feel her head. And I did, and I could feel all of her hair, and like, oh, I'm going to cry, like just talking about this part, but I could feel her hair and just like thought, like, I think I said out loud, like, that's my baby. And just like, you know, knew it was real. And like no pain at this point, just like excitement and intensity, you know, like not pleasant, but it wasn't painful. And at some point, Dr. Rodriguez started to do, some like quiet coaching. It wasn't like, you know, like high intensity, like push, push, push or anything like that. But he, was saying like, all right, on this next contraction, like, I want you to get like even more guttural, like, you know, really, really guttural, like really, really push hard, like bring your baby down. And so I was, even though I felt like I was giving it my all, I was giving it even more on those last few pushes. And there was a ton of people in the room at that point. And I just couldn't care less, like, which you hear, and I couldn't relate to before that moment. Like, I don't want a ton of people in the room when I'm naked. Like at this point, I wasn't in the robe anymore. But really couldn't care less. My midwife and the midwife who was, training with her also came back to be there to support us in the delivery. Even though that they couldn't, you know, have a primary role, they were there to support us, and you know, took beautiful pictures for us and things. When Charlie was actually born, her head had been coming out, and you could see, like, I could feel, you know, her head was quite a ways out, and we were just kind of there for several contractions, and it didn't feel like much more was happening. And then the contraction where she finally came out, I didn't even realize it had happened. So I was like bearing down and pushing like as hard as I could, like we had been doing for a while. And the doctor and the nurses and the midwives were in the room were encouraging and like, great, like push, you're doing great. But not in a like super loud way. And then I just hear my husband go, she's here, Charlie's here. Or he didn't say she, he didn't know at the time. He said, Charlie's here. And I just went, what? Like, I had no idea. Like, I think it would have taken me several minutes to realize if he had not told me. Cause even though it had taken so long for her to crown and to come down, and I've been pushing for 2 hours, when she was born, it was all at once and she just flew out.
And you were so in that deep labor land, you know, focus on things that when she came out, you're like, what? That's great.
Yeah. I had no idea. And then, I think even more than how supportive and amazing the hospital was during the whole labor process, like postpartum and like, you know, immediately after delivery was even more amazing, because they just, you know, she came out and they didn't announce boy or girl. They just handed her straight to me. They, oh man, they put her up on my chest. And they said, like, what have we got? And I lifted her up and I said, it's a girl. And my husband at the same time said, Charlie Jane is here, because that was going to be our middle name if it was a girl. And yeah, she just, I think it was 2 hours before anybody even tried to move her off of my chest. She was just on my chest and, you know, had a good strong cry. And one of the nurses was there kind of drying her off. And they delayed all of the exams and everything like that. And it was just me and my baby and my husband. Yeah, just got great bonding time for hours. The lights were dim and, there was a lot going on in the room, of course. But none of that was really affecting our little bubble. Like they were just kind of going about all of the things that they had to do. The delayed cord clamping, I think it was not, like maybe after like 30 seconds or a minute, the doctor asked if we were ready. And I was like, well, you know, maybe we can wait a little bit longer. And he was like, okay, sure. And you know, so we waited a few minutes longer and then my husband got to cut the cord and the delivery of the placenta, thankfully, like was super easy. That was kind of like in my mind, the last hurdle before I was really done. But it just came right out and, they started working on my repair, which, you know, you would think is normally something that would you would be very like concerned about, like someone is stitching you up. But I just like could barely even notice that. We were just so wrapped up in our baby.
That sounds like even, you know, I'm going back to the fact that you wanted to have a birth center birth.
Yeah.
And it sounds that even though you had these induction like process at the hospital, that especially towards the end there, it was very, all in all, it was very extremely respectful of your wishes and with your midwives, their support and your doula. Like it seemed like you mentioned, you said I was in, still in my little bubble, that that bubble was protected.
Absolutely. And they were just amazing. And I think I couldn't imagine a better birth experience. Like even if we had gotten to go to the birth center, like I just can't imagine how it could have been any better than it was at the hospital. Like they were just amazing. And yeah, got to start breastfeeding and, you know, our night stay in the hospital was still great. I think we saw like three different lactation consultants, but they all came in within like 5 minutes of calling them. Like they were so supportive of that. And I think it has, this hospital has like a baby friendly designation, but they're certainly super supportive of breastfeeding and preserving the golden hour and all of that. It was just amazing.
And you mentioned that this was a placental abruption. What clued them into that? That was there any specific sign or was it more just hindsight?
Yeah. So once the placenta was delivered, and I know my midwife was there and she was kind of asking like about it and if they saw anything, and he mentioned that there was a small clot behind the placenta, which was their indication that it was you know, a small placental abruption. So it was never one that was large enough to compromise oxygen supply or anything like that, but that was the cause of the bleeding, was the small clot behind the placenta that for whatever reason it had just started to separate early.
And you know, that's one of the things I really appreciate you sharing your story, because the idea of placental abruption can be so incredibly scary. And I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, if it's a full placental abruption, there are situations where it's really, really nerve-wracking and dangerous. But it's, I appreciate hearing that it's not a black and white situation. That are grays in between that can be managed, and you can still have a conversation around it, being mindful of the circumstances, like of this beautiful birth story that you described, that includes some sort of placental abruption. Like that's something that it, in going into it, I don't think, when thinking about a birth with placental abruption, people don't think these two things can even happen together.
Right, like having a peaceful, mostly non-medicated birth. Yeah, and I think if the situation could have been very different, like if we had ended up with at a different hospital or with different doctors, I think it easily there could have been people who were like, oh, unexplained bleeding, like let's automatically do a C-section, like better safe than sorry. But just the fact that they, you know, were looking at the situation for what it was and that the baby was doing okay and that we got to have conversations and we got to take our time. And, you know, at every stage in the process, at check-in, at starting Pitocin, at pushing and things like that, it just allowed, you know, this experience to unfold, as it did.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to in any way be dismissive about placental abruptions. I want to make sure I'm not, people listen, I'm not being dismissive of that, but I'm saying it's not black and white. And so, yeah, thank you so much for sharing this. And
yeah, thank you so much.
Thrilled that you got to have this experience that was so beautiful. And that you felt so empowered and you felt it was what you wanted, even though it wasn't what you wanted.
Right. Yeah. Was it amazing.
Yeah. Was there anything, Elena, that you wanted to make sure you mentioned that we didn't get to?
I will say one thing that the nurses that I noticed before I was in total labor land, that the nurses were really great about was that every shift change, they would just like introduce me to the new nurse and go over everything that we had talked about so that I wasn't like having to repeat my wishes over and over again. So they would say, you know, this is Elena. She's here from a birth center transfer. Here's what's going on. Here's what they want. They want to do delayed cord clamping and skin to skin. She's going to breastfeed. She's trying to not get an epidural. And they would like just go over all of that with the new nurses. So but we weren't having to do that work over and over again, like, but that again just contributed to like, okay, they really care about like trying to give me, you know, the experience that we want as much as possible. Like they're taking their own time to lay this out, at every shift change. And that meant a lot to me as well.
Yeah. And that sounds like really great. Like I know that every shift change they do that, but it seems that what I'm hearing is that the fact that they were doing it in front of you, because sometimes they do it not in the birthing room. So the fact that they were doing it in front of you helped you, and that you could hear, like not just whispering in the corner, but actually in a way that included you in that transfer of care between one nurse to another, really, it seems like that felt reassuring and helpful to you.
For sure.
Oh, so good. Yeah. I'm going to share that with some of my nurse friends, because I know they obviously share with each other what's going on, but that it can be helpful to have it be done depending on when what's going on in labor with a client. But excellent. Well, thank you so very much for talking with me today. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you. I loved every minute of it. Great.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Oh, and here's what Elena had for breakfast.
Scrambled eggs and some clementine oranges.
I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Lozada.